Hi, K-Watchers. It's Leanne.
Hi, everyone. It's Juliet. Welcome to the K-Watch Party.
Today, we have The Boyfriend, episodes 3 and 4. The greenhouse is basically a crush factory with love triangles and love squares forming. It's basically a romantic origami, and we're loving every minute of it. Let's dive in.
That's a good one.
Thanks. Good morning. How are you, Juliet?
I am struggling this morning. I had a very late night celebrating some birthdays, so I have taken an Advil and a lot of coffee, so I may be quite slow today. I also took the condition before and after, the one that we've mentioned. Didn't seem to do its job this time around.
You know, it's all about mitigation. Like, you could be much worse if you hadn't done the condition. So
you're very true. I'm halfway struggling.
But it's not your normal struggles. Your normal struggles is just a daily life.
Just life beating me down. This is life plus alcohol beating me down. So I'm about 3/4 of the way down.
So what happened?
So I went out to celebrate some birthdays yesterday. And we were at a place. They were trying to kick us out at 11 o'clock, which was very odd because Google said they close at 12. Anyway, so then we were just meandering on the streets, the few of us that wanted to continue the night. So we ended up at this place called The Sandbar. And okay. It looked great from the outside. People were milling about.
So we just wandered in.
We just wandered in. Mm-hmm. And we go in and we just immediately, what is going on with my feet? Oh, it's sand on the floor. Because it's called The Sandbar. So kitschy. At this point, it's gotten quite late. So one of the women's husbands had called and said, hey, where are you? Like, what time are you going to be home? She's explaining. And he's like, by the way, I've been tracking you. And there's a man on the run on the street that you're on, right at the corner that you are at. Please stay inside the sandbar.
Wait, a man on the run from the law.
From the law.
Like a fugitive.
Yes.
Like Dr. Richard Kimball is out on the streets.
So I was like, we were laughing about it, but I really was planning my escape. I'm like, okay, where will I hide if this person comes in here? Like, if the police end up in here. I was looking for the escape route and I was looking for a safe place where a bullet could not hit me.
Right.
And then we're just like hanging out, having drinks, and I see a very long line of police and ambulances come by. So that was a very exciting, interesting, a little scary part of the night.
But you saw the police roll by and you just kept drinking.
We did indeed.
Yeah.
We did.
Not to be bothered.
And no one else in the bar seemed to be bothered.
But as long as it didn't ruin your night.
It was a great time. It was, you know, also just like doing things unexpected and spontaneous is really what brings flavor into life.
When we used to travel, you know, like the summer after college, I went to Paris and spent 2 months there. And I didn't, you know, we didn't have GPS on our phones.
Yeah.
I didn't even have a phone. I used a phone card that I bought from the Tabac. And I landed. I didn't know a lick of French. I didn't even bring a towel with me. I had I had a backpack and like a credit card. And that's how I managed.
And there was no Yelp.
There's no Yelp. And you just wander the streets.
Yes.
And you're like, oh, this place looks okay. And you just walk in.
We're sounding like boomers at this point. But I really do miss that era of being able to do things randomly, unexpectedly. Honestly, if we looked it up on Yelp, we probably would have never ended up at the sandbar.
Right.
So I want to live a little bit more like that. But I also think that the risk feels too high. You know, like when we go out or we go out for a meal, it's got to be worth my while. It's got to be worth my time and my money. And so I want to know, is this place good?
I know.
But it takes out.
We've also just become snobs because of things like Yelp, where it's like, oh, actually, this wasn't up to par to my taste. When we were 20s, we just ate whatever we ate, you know?
I know. It's like my kids, too. I had planned a date night for my son and myself. And I said, you know, we can go to any pizza place that you want, like a really fancy pizza place. There's so many nice pizza places around our neighborhood. And he goes, oh, yeah, I'd like to go to Domino's. And I, you know, the purity of that also really warmed my heart. But I was like, I'm sorry, but Domino's has no place to sit. We're not going there.
Mama cannot eat Domino's.
Yeah, I am not spending my Friday night eating Domino's on a sidewalk. How are you doing?
I am also tired for different reasons. My older daughter is the second week of school and she came home on Tuesday with a 103 fever. Oh. She's had this fever for 4 days now. and a terrible cough. So it's just the flu, but man, everyone go and get your flu shots. My little one also had a terrible cold like 2 weeks, 3 weeks ago.
Oh my gosh.
And so these super bugs are everywhere. Go get your flu shots. Before I knew I was going to be up all night, I did put on my biocollagen mask that we had talked about last week. I had bought it a few weeks ago with my Prime Day haul and was really excited. And so I finally put it on. It's pretty cool. How does my face look?
I will say, and this is no, no cap, as the kids say, it looks good. It's taut and it's quite dewy.
Right. I thought so too. And I have not slept very much. So it's really the mask. It's like your condition. It's to mitigate the badness, you know? Yeah, it's exactly how you've seen it on TikTok. It goes on white. It's not super slippery. It's almost rubbery like that Dr. Jart mask.
Yes.
And then you put it on in two pieces. And then when I woke up, and you're just supposed to wear it overnight, and all that collagen, that white collagen, is supposed to seep into your skin, which I guess it did. And then you wake up and it's like totally clear.
But it wasn't uncomfortable sleeping with it.
It wasn't super uncomfortable sleeping. It's like actually kind of cooling. And it's kind of sticks to your face. Mm. I feel like the thinner ones kind of like slip and slide. Yes, this one really sticks to your face. And so, yeah, I'm a fan. I brought one for you.
Oh my gosh, I'm so excited. Your face is a testament.
Okay.
No sleep and you still look, you're still glowing.
Yes, thank you. The other thing that I got on my Prime Day haul was a sauna.
Oh, I got that too.
What? Wait, like which one did you get?
The one that's like a tent, right?
Yes, there's like you sit inside.
A portable, yes.
So it's a probably like a 4 foot tall tent. And it has like a zipper and like a steaming mechanism that you put inside.
Yes.
So it's a steaming sauna. Did you get the one with the little foldable chair in it?
Yes.
I think that's the best part about the thing. It comes with a foldable chair.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, my kids love it. They want to take it to soccer.
I know. I don't have any decent camping chairs for soccer.
Yeah, exactly. That's the only one we have.
Oh, so we're taking our little steam sauna chair with us.
That has our bare butt sweat on it. Yep.
Okay. So then my question is, are you going in there naked?
Well, I did once and then as you know, we don't have a lot of window coverings and I have to do it in our kitchen. So then I was like, this is not cool. So I've been wearing booty shorts, but topless.
Okay.
It is a little bit inconvenient to use because you kind of have to fold it. At least for me, I fold it up and I have to put it away because it's a behemoth.
Yeah. But also, it's big enough that you definitely have to put it away, but small enough where you can kind of just pop it up anywhere.
Yes.
And just as long as you have an electric outlet. Anyway.
I mean, you look at the thing and you're like, this is such a rudimentary mechanism, but it's brilliant.
So smart.
You're trapped in the tent and it gets steaming as it would in a sauna. And you really only, you don't use it for that long.
It's recommended to sauna 4 times a week for 20 minutes each session. That's what everybody's saying is actually like very beneficial for your health.
Okay.
So that's kicked good to me know. Off. Yeah. I also got a waterproof iPad holder so I could watch TV
I'm
in
sorry,
there.
What?
Because what are you doing sitting for 20 minutes in there?
Did they sell that as a package? Like, you know how sometimes Amazon will be like frequently bought together.
Suggested for you. Yeah. No, my genius self just thought of that.
Wow, that is a good one.
What are you going to do in there for?
Well, mine has a little window. Does yours?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are you looking out at the?
I look. Well, it gets steamy and then I just keep wiping it down. But I watch my laptop from the outside. But the waterproof thing makes a lot more sense.
Okay. Were you watching the boyfriend from inside your sauna?
No. And to that end, the reason I could not is because, you know, you have to read the subtitles.
Yes.
And typically when we're recapping Korean shows, I can understand most of it, that like I don't have to read too much. The boyfriend, I have to pay such close attention that I felt so much empathy for you and sympathy because you have been struggling through this. Because I can't even walk away.
No, you can't.
When I walk away, I've like lost the entire plot. And even when I'm reading the subtitles, I know they're not right. You know, that it's not quite accurate to what they're saying. It's not encompassing all of the feeling. And so it feels frustrating watching it.
Welcome to my life. We know who else loves to sauna. The boys.
Oh my gosh.
And the boyfriend.
Oh my goodness. The fact that that is a hobby to me is, I'm going to start citing that as my hobby. I love to sauna. I love to take baths.
I know. Kazuto, what do you do in your free time? Yeah, just like to sauna, hot rocks.
Also, is that, you think, like gay terminology? Like, is
like
that,
a bathhouse.
Yeah.
It didn't seem like it, right, it didn't from seem like what it. Usak's response was. Usak was like, okay, okay. Yeah,
but also we know Usak is incredibly boring. Oh, so he does not know how to react to things.
Terrible conversationalist.
Okay. And by the way, some Reddit, not even sleuthing, on one of the very major Reddit threads about the boyfriend.
Yeah.
They're saying that Kazuto was a adult video star. I mean, maybe that's too extreme to say he's a star, but he had, when he was very young, like 18, they're presuming when he came up from the country and he was trying to make a living, he was in gay porn. And so people are now posting this on Twitter and afraid of how this will ruin his dynamic with his family or his reputation. They're not sure, but
that is surprising, but also not surprising. I mean, a lot of people here too, that's just something you kind of have to do if you come from nothing and are trying to make
fans,
it.
Right?
Yeah. Like, let's ask about Shun. Like, how has Shun survived?
Well, yeah, especially after listening to him playing the keyboard. I'm sorry, you're a musician?
He's definitely no Beethoven. Yeah.
But in this thread, they said it seems a lot of these guys come from that world, and that's how they were known.
Right.
You know, and that's how they became a part of the show.
Well, wherever Kazuto got his start, he's definitely the hottest ticket at the house right now.
Oh my gosh.
He came from, he's like not even there. He went from zero to one. He doesn't even have to show up, and these guys are all falling for him. So let's start talking about episode three. Episode three is titled, A Kiss Would Make Things Clear, which really got things started.
Oh, yeah.
So a lot of time is spent on Dai and Shun. We left episode two on a cliffhanger. Shun was about to make his pick for who he wanted to go on his coffee truck shift with. Everyone's like, oh, who's it going to be? To this point, he's been very coy. Like, we're not sure if he likes Dai back, but it's very clear Dai likes him. So we open episode three. He picks Dai. Fine.
At this point, I'm over them.
Seriously. These two episodes, really the nail in the coffin on that couple. For me, in terms of rooting for them. I don't care for them at all.
Over it. Also, because no one else has gotten quite the airtime.
Mm-hmm.
Even like knowing their story, I feel like we've gotten too much about these.
Too much. I think it is that a lot just happens between them and very quickly. You know, so Dai's so happy he goes on this coffee truck date. I mean, he's just like always has a shit-eating grin on his face. He just can't even hide how happy he is.
So they're in the coffee truck, but actually Shun doesn't really talk to him.
I know. He's like cold. But yeah, is he playing cold. Hard to get?
Right.
What is that? Right. Anyway.
And Dai is just so into him that he's like, oh, he's playing hard to get. It's like mind games. And then they sit after they've sold their coffee. They sit out there looking out at the sunset. And of course, Shun says, well, you know, I don't really know how I feel, but I will know how I feel if we kiss. So isn't that an invitation?
100% an invitation. So Dai goes for it.
Yeah. As any reasonable, logical person would. And then Shun says, no, I don't mean right now. What?
Like, this is not the right time. How is this not the right time? It's the sun is setting.
Right. I know. The panel's like, you got to do it before the sun sets. It's she's going to turn into a pumpkin.
Exactly. It felt like a fairy tale, like Beauty and the Beast. Like, once that,
that
rose petal falls, then it's just a beast forever. Yeah, it's literally the perfect opportunity. You're at the beach. It's sunset. You guys have spent all day together. Mm-hmm. He's literally said, I need to kiss you to see if this is going to happen. And he rejects him.
I mean, let's say Shun. I want to say he's a walking red flag, but he's, well, it's actually just Psychology 101. This kid has got some problems.
He's got trauma. And we'll go into it. In this moment, we're not sure why Shun is acting this way. And I just wrote in caps, Shun, what game are you playing? Because this is unacceptable. So a lot of 3 and 4 are a lot of scenes of Shun and Dai together. There's another scene later over dinner. They're all outside grilling. Dai brings up something about the government. He's like pro-government. And then Taehyun, who's next to him, is like, you know, questioning leadership sometimes is necessary to drive change and promote forward progress in our country. And Dai just...
He gets very offended or butthurt about being challenged. And, okay, so this brings another sub-point that I was making last week about Taehyun. Is it Taehyun or Taehyun?
You tell me.
Well, they translate as Taehyun. Mm-hmm. So we'll go with that. But... the TikTok I was referencing is this creator that I think both of us follow, Chris Joe. He's a gay man in Toronto. He's a Chinese gay man in Toronto who's dating a doctor. So he's hilarious. But he thinks the reason why Taehyun is not getting picked is because his mentality is so un-Japanese. This guy, Chris, is saying it's not even Korean thinking. He's much more Western in that he's like, yeah, we should challenge government and we should stand up for what we believe and we should instigate change. And for the Japanese, typically they're the way the cultural approach towards leadership and government in Japan tends to be you follow what you're told. You know, this is kind of this Confucius Buddhist belief that like you do as you're told, they know better than we do, and let's follow the leader. And so Chris believes that that's a reason that Taehyun is not getting picked because he's very not Japanese. His thinking is not Japanese. And he's a very attractive person, but he like gets no screen time. Nobody wants to go on a date with him. It's quite sad.
He gets like 3 minutes in these two episodes.
Yeah. And then he's gone. It's almost like he's been kicked off. But then for Dai, I think he's so young that for him to feel challenged feels very diminishing.
Yeah, I think he showed his youth in that conversation. I didn't even know what was going on.
This is when I was like, is the translation correct? Because that felt like such an unreasonable thing to get upset about.
Right. He storms out of that conversation. He, you know, and he pointedly walks by Shun. And like Shun can tell that he's upset, right? And so Dai goes inside to leave this conversation kind of heated. And it almost felt like Dai did it just to see if Shun would follow. Yes. This was a test for Dai. Because when Shun follows him in, Dai says, I'm glad you came in. So is Dai then playing this game? Is he just kind of storming out just to test Shun? Because the other thing I was thinking about, I have a theory about last week with the naked photos.
Oh,
I don't hand over my phone to anybody and let them scroll through my photo gallery.
Especially knowing what you have on your photo album.
Yeah. I have a bunch of children on my photo album. And even then, I don't let people just kind of like scroll through.
I used to have a ton of selfies on my photo album. I bet you did. And then I would never show that to others. I was so embarrassed for other people to see that. I don't do that anymore at all.
What has changed between selfie Julia and non-selfie Julia?
Gravity, okay, on my face. I don't want to see my face anymore. Also, I have children invading my life. And so usually the attention is directed to them.
So I just got to know, these selfies, were they like duck lip pouting selfies and it's just your face? Or are you like selfieing in front of
like the Eiffel Tower?
Shop? Yeah.
No. Just me against a bare white wall. Because I wanted to admire my youth. And I no longer want to do that anymore. So...
Oh, yeah. We were just at a party and you and me at the birthday party and we were taking a bunch of photos. And then the husband of a friend was like, to me, he's like, you look good in these photos. But I was like, it's just because there's like a smoke machine and it's dark. And if it really like filters out everything in these like kind of dark rooms. He's like, no. You got to go do a photo shoot before you lose this.
Midnight. The sun is setting.
Yeah, seriously. Talk about a backhanded compliment. Because I was like, okay, thank you that you think I should memorialize this. But also, Jesus, I get it. Time is like, running out.
The lights are coming on. Please, hurry.
Only way I'll do a photo shoot is if there's a fog machine and it's very, very dim in the room. So yeah, so Dai is no fool. This is not Dai's first rodeo. Clearly, we see that he is, you know, been around the block. So I feel like he's kind of having tantrums just to get Shun's attention. He's showing Shun his phone to get attention. That one backfired. He thought Shun would want to see his eggplant.
He's like, oh, I want that eggplant.
And be very excited.
That Shun was like, no, really, you a hoe.
Yeah, he really backfired on that one. So they're inside having a nice conversation. Dai says, tell me how you became the way you are. Which is such an intimate question. I don't even think I've asked my husband that. Tell me how you became the way you are.
You're like, I know how you became the way you are and I don't want to know.
Yeah, exactly. I met your parents.
I mean, but this is why these dating reality shows, especially the Asian ones, are so fascinating to me because, I mean, they're a peek into someone's history, right? And what I have seen with Shun, especially, as we will know in this conversation, is who he shows up as in the world is directly related to how he was treated as a child.
Yeah.
And all, I mean, really all of us. There's this whole thing about attachment theory and how we were attached as children shows up in our adult relationship. So it is so eye-opening and kind of just a very like interesting sociology, psychology experiment.
And I think Terrace House, more than any other show that we watch, even the Korean ones, and feels like a Japanese thing. They're very direct in the way that they ask their questions about very personal things.
Right.
And like really upfront. In Terrace House, like regular Terrace House, they're all sitting around, men and women. And then their first questions are like, what are you going to do with your life? What are your goals and dreams? Like they just met.
Yes.
And in America, you would... That's not the first question. It's like, what do you do? Or where are you from? This one is, how are you going to fulfill your parents' expectations of you?
Ooh, that's deep.
So we kind of feel that here. That's a pretty deep question. We find out that Shun, he says his parents put him in a basket. He really went into this basket. Is this a special basket? Dropped him at an orphanage when he was a baby. He lived there for 18 years.
I mean.
At an orphanage.
All the hate and dislike I've had for him melted away with this story because clearly he's acting this way because of all of that trauma.
He says he has had no family love his entire life. Talk about capital T trauma.
Yes.
And okay, so my question was, he must have been a cute ass baby. He's a cute ass man. So why didn't anyone pick him up? Because, right, like if you're going to go to the orphanage, you're going to pick a cute one.
I don't think that adoption is a big thing in Asia.
So I looked this up.
Yeah.
This is from the internet. Many Japanese orphans live in childcare institutions where they have a slim chance of entering a stable and loving family. Only 18% of children in these institutions are adopted in Japan, compared to 93% in Australia, 77% in the US.
One, we have a robust fostering system, and that is, you know, you follow the money. It's because people get paid to do that. Also in Korea, the adoption rate used to be quite high, but there's a big scandal around the adoption agencies in Korea. And so a lot of Korean adoptees really hated the history of where they came from. And I'm not sure about the details, but adoption was really big in Korea. But if you think about it, you don't meet very many adopted Japanese people, especially in the U.S., whereas you meet a lot of Korean adoptees in the U.S.
Yep.
So there must be something there, and they didn't make a business out of it in Japan.
Well, they're saying that culturally, there is a preference among Japanese families to have their own biological children, so there's that. But legally, birth parents retain strong rights even when adoption avenues are being sought for their child.
Really?
Yeah, so they still have control over what their kids' futures are, even though they've given them up. Yeah, they still keep parental rights. And so that's pretty tough. I don't know what Shun's story is, but
yeah. I mean, yeah, you're right. He is very good looking.
Yeah. Like he would have been a cute baby. Somebody would have picked him up if adoption was a thing in Japan. So that's quite sad to think there's a lot of children being raised by the institutions in Japan.
Yeah, and I was referencing this thing about attachment theory. It's a big thing in psychology. And he, I think, is a disorganized attachment. It's like somebody who doesn't have consistent attachment. And those people, their childhood is marked by fear or trauma. And so they don't have a very consistent caregiver. How it shows up in adult relationships is they are likely to crave close relationships, but they push others away when they show them attention. So it's classic. It's psychology 101, what's happening here.
It's unfortunate because it's actually kind of a red flag. Like this guy is emotionally kind of not what you're looking for. But Dai is too young to know that.
He's so head over heels for this guy. He doesn't care. He's like, keep walking, raise those red flags even higher. I had something to say about children. My husband has been in this week-long training that he's been dragging his feet to go to, but he's had to go to all week.
For work?
For work. Mm-hmm. You know how it is.
Yeah, sexual harassment training, skip.
Yeah.
But violence in the leadership
training, skip. He has to go to. What he gained from this, or at least what I gained from what he gained, is that there's this thing about like radical candor, more corporate speak. He asked me, what do you think is the ratio of positive feedback to criticism for a child?
Ooh.
For a successful kind of relationship you have with a child. What do you think?
You're asking me?
Yes. Or have you done the radical candor training already?
I have worked for smaller companies where
they don't have the budget.
They're not training us in anything. So positive to negative?
To make a successful child, successful relationship with a child.
75-25?
That's right. 4-1.
Oh, really?
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. What do that you think sense. It is for a successful marriage?
Oh, I don't.
What is it in your current state? And what do you think it should be?
We've played this game before with our spouses of how much do you think the wife does versus the husband does?
Oh, right.
And you got in big trouble because you stated a ratio that was way lower than your husband thought it was.
Yes. And then he just said, I'm bad at math.
In our marriages, positive feedback ratio to negative feedback. Oh, it's got to be the opposite, maybe 25-75.
No, for a successful marriage?
Oh, I thought it was what it actually is.
Yes.
For a successful marriage.
For us currently, it's about negative 25.
Oh, that we were talking about ourselves. Okay, roll that back. I'd say 100-0.
It's 5-1.
Okay, I'm really bad at math.
100-0, so you should never give it any negative feedback?
That's how I like to live my life. Only positive.
Right.
Wait, so what's 5-1? So for every five nice things, you say one kind of
is that, I mean, to me, that's actually quite shocking that it's more than what you would tell your children.
Mm-hmm.
I think children maybe have a lot more secure typically should have more secure attachment, so they don't need as much.
Right.
Although 4 to me is a lot. And then he said in the workplace, it's 6-1.
Yeah.
Because I think you have a much more insecure attachment to whoever your boss is. And for him, this training was like, you really need to like create the kind of environment where people feel safe.
Yeah.
But I was also shocked by the marriage one, because
mm-hmm.
that's definitely not what's happening here.
It's flipped. 1 positive to 5 negative.
Yes.
We're going to be on this podcast just like laughing about it. And our husbands.
We're getting in trouble after this.
We are going to get in big trouble. I am not a big positive affirmation person. You know this. Like, I'm not good about giving positive feedback, but I do have, you know, people on my team. I am trying to be more like, have I told you today how much I appreciate you? Like, I'll just say this in meetings.
Okay. They're like, are you dying?
Yeah.
What's happening?
I'm like, you're the best. You know that, right? Have I told you lately? You're the best. So I am, I think, 6-1 in the workplace, 1-5 in marriage. So after this hard conversation of Shun telling about his past, they have like a quiet moment in the room. Shun is playing piano for Dai. And it's quite romantic.
Except he's playing in minor tones. So the whole thing sounds like he's in like a funeral or he is in a haunted house.
Shun just has downer vibes. Kind of just a wet blanket. He always has a pout on his face. We now know why he's had no love in his life, but it's not easy to watch. After this night, they get a chance to go on a blind date. They get to pick a date, and you only get to go on this date if you match with the other person.
Yeah.
This is like going to paradise in Singles Inferno.
Yes.
And this is very different than old Terrace House. Terrace House, before, you didn't have this like moderating.
Right. They just, honestly, in Terrace House, they just sat around. And somehow it was fascinating.
Yeah. I mean, you think this is boring, right?
Right. But the producers have gotten wise to the Korean ways.
Yes, they're taking the formula from the Korean way. So instead of going to a paradise hotel, this couple, and the only one that matches is Shun and Dai. Nobody else is matching. That's how kind of discordant everything else is. And so I think that's why they spend so much time on Shun and Dai. They're the only ones. They get to eat Chinese food and walk around an aquarium. It seems like they have a great time. They're really into each other. There's a good conversation.
Yeah. They're both smiling.
this aquarium that made me really sad. There's like a polar bear.
That polar bear did look
like he did not belong there.
He's ready to jump off the cliff.
Yeah. They feed an otter. Like the otter sticks his little fingies through this hole and they're like petting it. I mean, like the human diseases that otter is getting.
Right.
This reminded me of the time I saw a white beluga whale being held at the Lotte Mall in Seoul. Like the Lotte Mall.
How did they even get that?
They just capture them over in like Russia and then they just sell them. There's a very lucrative. What? Have you seen Blackfish, the documentary?
No.
Oh, you've never seen Blackfish?
No.
Oh my gosh. You will never go to SeaWorld again. You'll never want to see dolphin or whale in captivity.
Oh, I remember when this was big, but I did not watch it.
Blackfish is a documentary about orcas being held by SeaWorld and other like kind of amusement parks with orcas.
Yeah. Oh, gosh.
And so because of that documentary, there's no more Shamu in the San Diego SeaWorld. Yeah.
Because they were exposed and...
Because they realized, well, A, and you'll see this in Blackfish, the trainers, quote unquote, are not even trainers. They're not like marine biologists. And like what they do is they just rip these babies away from the moms like immediately then sell them to somewhere else. Anyway, go watch Blackfish. But there is a...
You said beluga there was a beluga.
Whale in the Lotte Mall.
My gosh.
In the basement. He doesn't even have sun.
He's just like listless. So listless.
So like activists in South Korea have been petitioning Lotte, which is a big conglomerate, to save this whale. And it's still there. I think about that whale a lot. Okay, anyway. So yeah, they go to the aquarium. And at the end of the episode, we think everything's going great.
Oh my gosh. Let me tell you, these producers are so good at the cliffhangers.
Yes. Cliffhanger in episode 3.
Shun is sitting there in the interview room looking like his wet blanket self. And, you know, we think he's going to say how amazing the date was, how he's really into Dai now. But in a real twist, he says, Dai did things on the date that made me lose interest in him.
Yeah.
Dun. And it ends.
Yes. This guy's cold-blooded.
He knows how to draw somebody in, though. He knows how to drag that interest along.
So that was episode 3. Episode 4, you see Dai really trying to get close to him. He's like kind of stroking him on the couch. Yeah. Shun is always sleeping on the couch. There's like multiple instances of Dai going up to him and like kind of waking him up on the couch.
This kid is depressed. He's on the couch, but not in most instances, he's facing away.
Yeah.
And if Dai tries to put his hand on him, there was one scene where they were all talking as a group and Shun was lying down. Dai put his hand into Shun's pocket and Shun reaches over and takes it out.
Like flicks it away.
Yeah, and I was like, that was so rude.
Yeah.
And hurtful.
I know.
And Dai is like, he's just a happy-go-lucky guy.
I know. And the thing about Shun is also, if you're tired,
Go to your room.
Yeah. So I'm also like, he's just also kind of looking for attention.
Yes.
The only reason why you sleep on a couch in the middle of a common room is that you want people to pay attention to you and ask you how you're doing. So he's very cold to Dai. Dai is very confused. Shun later tells Kazuto there's nothing going on between them.
Yeah. And that actually, that leading up to the Kazuto date was, I think, another heartbreak for Dai because Kazuto had the chance to pick somebody and the people that were interested to go on a date with him would raise their hand. Mm-hmm. So Dai's the only one that puts his hand down.
Mm.
And he looks over at Shun and he's a little shocked, mm-hmm. right? Because he thought there was something going on between the two of them. And here Shun is saying, I want to go on a date with Kazuto.
Yeah. Shun says he doesn't like Dai's high energy vibe. They definitely do have different vibes.
Do you think that's legitimate? Yeah, I guess. You know, people probably look at us and they're like, oh my God, I cannot stand how they, the Japanese and Koreans, they use the word tension. Like their tension is really high because we're just like, well, I say we, but you know, with people who have a lot of energy, it could be a little overwhelming for people who have low energy.
Yeah. Yeah. Like for our husbands.
Yeah. I mean, for sure. They like the tension is so high. How do I get her out of here?
There, we went camping the other weekend with a lot of people and you know, quiet hours are after 10. And so, of course, the loud ones and the chatty ones were out by the picnic area, like chatting past quiet hours. And somebody in the tent area goes, everyone shut the F up. And the next morning, everyone thought it was my husband yelling at me because my voice carries. So, yeah.
Was it?
No, no.
I have a very similar story of when I went to a hotel with some of our friends. Oh, yes. And there was a club night happening. So some of the moms, we went out.
At the bottom of the hotel, there's a club. At the bottom.
Yes. And my hotel room, my family's hotel room, was very close to the entrance of the hotel. So after the club night, moms and I and some of the people at this club, we came outside and we were talking at the entrance of the hotel, but it was outside. And then somebody from the hotel staff comes out and says, hey, we've received a noise complaint. Can you guys please keep it down? And it turns out it was my husband making the complaint.
He called it in. He called in your ass.
He called it in. And then he didn't realize it was me until then. He looked out the, after he made the complaint, he looked out the window. He's like, it's my motherfucking wife. Good God.
Classic. That is a classic story. So that was Shun and Dai. The only other person of note that gets really any screen time in these two episodes is Kazuto and all of his love interests. So Kazuto is a chef. He clearly is working and so is just kind of never around. But by the end of episode four, he has four men clamoring for him.
Oh my gosh. There is something about him that is really congenial and attractive. He's a different happy-go-lucky than Dai.
Yes. Sweet looking person. I also like really like his kind of preppy style. Yes. He's always kind of in like a sweater and he's got his New Balances on. So the first guy we find out who has a crush on Kazuto is Usak. Usak, we learn a lot about these two episodes. He's very shy. He's very insecure.
Despite being a go-go dancer, putting his, you know, entire body in front of everyone, dancing. So you would think he is very energetic and has a lot of confidence. But it turns out that he's very insecure.
It's almost hard to watch how insecure he is. It's also interesting to watch like mixed signals and how much that plays with your mind.
Mm-hmm.
There is an instance where it's Usak's turn to pick a coffee date. And they kind of turn it on Usak. Now they're making it so that anybody who wants to go with you on the date should raise their hands. So then Usak closes his eyes, counts to three, and then he like lifts up his head. I was so nervous for him that no one would raise their hand. It would just crush him. But Kazuto doesn't raise his hand. And so insecure Usak is like, oh, he doesn't like me. Yeah.
Well, the thing too about Kazuto is when he first saw Usak, he was mm-hmm. like, oh my gosh, I know this guy because I've seen him dance. And was in such admiration of him that I think he's maybe a little bit
intimidated,
but also like he's like another being to him. Mm-hmm. He's not somebody that he would ever date. He's like, oh, I can admire him from afar.
Right. They do have a conversation that Usak initiates and it's like the worst conversation we've ever seen on a dating show.
So boring. It's already boring. And then add on to that, like the most uninteresting conversation about going to the bathhouse.
Yeah, it was almost like Usak doesn't know how to talk to people. So he like wrote down a list of questions. Like, what do you like to do on your free time?
That's right. He was looking at his phone, right? Yeah. He's like, okay, what's next?
Yeah.
What do you like to eat?
It seemed like Kazuto walked away from that conversation being like, oh, it was actually kind of cute how like shy he is.
Yeah.
So we kind of think Kazuto has a crush on Usak. We're not sure. Then we have Alan.
Oh, yeah. We have not talked about Alan.
He's new to the house.
What a breath of fresh air. I
love Alan. He's part Brazilian, part Italian, part Japanese. It seems like he doesn't read Japanese very well, so it doesn't seem like he grew up in Japan.
Yeah, I think he said he grew up in Brazil.
Okay. He's almost too fun for this house. He is just...
Oh, my gosh. Talk about high tension.
Everyone here is very mild and gentle. Alan comes in being a lot more of what I think if there was a Western show like this, yeah. It would be a lot more of Alan's and a lot less of like a Gensei.
100%.
Really brings into stark contrast kind of an Alan vibe versus kind of these Japanese gay men vibe.
Yes. And I also notice in the way that he thinks, it's very different than what they are used to. For example, when Dai was having his little conniption fit about the government and whatever, Alan tries to wrap it all up and be like, look, it's all about love, you know?
Yeah.
That's not something that people in Asia really say.
No.
But, you know, it's a very westernized thinking of like, let's not argue about this. Mm-hmm. You know, at the end of the day, it's all about like bringing together the people that you love. And then when they were talking about the chicken breast, and how much the budget was, how much the chicken breast was eating into their budget.
Oh my God. That fact that they're having another conversation about the chicken, I was like, and freaking Dai has his calculator out.
He's counting coins.
Oh my God. He was counting coins out of a change purse. This poor boy.
That conversation, as weird as it is, it was very interesting because they are very direct, because he brought it up. I think in a lot of other shows, they probably would have been talking shit behind doors. But Dai says, like, look, I said it and nobody's supporting me. But then I thought it was weird that he's having this conversation in front of everyone rather than putting, like,
just talk to Usopp.
Talking to Usopp on his own. Yeah. Anyway, and then Usopp here is almost like an Eeyore. He's like, oh, I'm sorry. And
I need my chicken. Yeah,
like, okay, how about I'll eat less. And I think that's a Japanese way of thinking too. Like, I'm going to fold. Yeah. Okay, I won't do it. You know, I'm going to sacrifice for the better of everyone here. Alan, on the other hand, is like, guys, let's just make more money, you know, which again is a Western way of thinking.
Yeah.
So I think this is a really interesting contrast of the Japanese way, the Japanese personality is much more muted. And then Alan comes in, swoops in.
I mean, the fact that it never occurred to these guys that they could just sell more coffee, be more industrious, and make some money and pay for this goddamn chicken. Yeah, it took Alan, who is, I guess, he works at an IT company, to figure this out. And the other guys are like, profit?
Yeah. And then Kazuto says, I'll think of ways to make money-saving meals.
If this was a Korean show, they would just be eating packaged ramen every night. And that's how they save money. But in Japan, no, they've got to eat like grilled pork and octopus and sashimi. Alan also, when he appears in the house, knows Dai.
Oh, yes.
They kind of jump up. They're definitely the two party boys. Like these two boys are in a circle.
Yes. And they're out in the scene.
When Alan enters and Dai recognizes him and they know each other, Shun's face.
Oh, another red flag moment, because Shun can't handle it. He's hiding himself with a pillow, presumably for the sun.
I mean, really, get those guys like a canopy. Yeah. They're always in the sun. But anyway, keep going.
And then he keeps his eyes closed for most of Alan's intro. He won't really look at him.
Do you think it was because he can't handle Alan? Or do you think he was like, of course, Dai knows him. He's like the Samantha Jones. Like, you can't bring him to a party and there's not someone he's slept with.
Yes. I felt like, I think it's the latter.
Yeah. Even more interesting is they tell the group, oh, we just kind of DM'd. We never really got close or met.
Yeah. And then he says in the confessional, oh, we went all the way.
Yeah. He's like, how do you say it? We went all the way. Yeah. That's how you say it.
Yeah. The panel's like, they had sex.
I know. I was shocked that the panel was
so forward about it.
Oh, yeah. No, he took the old one eye to the optometrist.
What?
He tossed a hot dog down the hallway.
Oh, good God.
He got a hot beef injection. So those two have definitely done it. I love that. I love that these two are such party boys.
I know.
That of all the gay men coming together in a show, that they've slept together.
Yes.
And I love that they lied about it. Just love it.
Alan is interested in Kazuto. Immediately, he walks in and he's like, that is my type.
Yeah. And he's like, what a relief.
And he marks his territory by telling everyone very early, like, oh, I'm into him.
Out in the open. It seems like Kazuto has a crush on Alan too, because he comes home from his coffee barista date with Shun after saying, oh, I think I have a crush on someone. He comes home immediately and asks Alan to chat outside. Mm-hmm. And actually had texted him on his way home. He says, next time I'd really like to work with you very much. So that seems to be a love match. But Usopp,
He overhears somebody saying, like, oh, you know, you got to be like Alan. You got to go out there and just let it be known. So Usopp takes that and he takes some action. So he goes out and he asks Kazuto to speak with him. And he tells him, I have feelings for you.
And then poor Kazuto, he keeps getting taken out into the cold to be confessed to. This poor boy. Ryota.
That was a shock to me.
Out of nowhere.
Well, I think it does make sense, because he said he looked at Shun and was like, yeah, I probably could never be in a relationship with that guy. He probably was like, Bull is sleeping all the time. I'm already a downer. I don't need to be with another downer. That was a good self-awareness moment. Yeah. But then he goes for the guy that he knows everybody else likes. It's like, guy, maybe put your energy elsewhere.
I know. Is it also because Kazuto's kind of not around, so he seems mysterious?
Yes.
And he actually has a stable job.
Right.
Unlike the
right.
Rest
They're
of
all
that.
Like, I need somebody to pay for me.
Yeah, so Ryota's kind of been all over the place. Like, we thought maybe he liked Gensei in the beginning, then out of nowhere he says he likes Shun, and now out of nowhere he likes Kazuto. So next week we'll probably see Ryota.
He's going to be into,
like, someone else.
Well, there's Usak. Only Usak. No one's going for Taehyun.
We end episode 4 with another matching date, but this time it's a sleepover.
Oh my gosh. And they end with another great cliffhanger where Kazuto is the one who has matched and he knows who he has picked.
Right.
And then ? They end the episode.
Yep. Who do you think Kazuto picked and matched with him?
Alan,
right?
Obviously.
Or I feel like it could be Usak.
Oh, you think so?
I think he has a tender spot for Usak, but I think, again, like we've been saying, he thinks Usak's totally out of his league and wouldn't like him.
Yeah.
But now that he's been confessed to.
I think, though, his energy with Alan is a better match for him than Usak is.
Yeah. They're both too kind of like
Usak
mild.
Needs somebody like an Alan.
Yeah.
To get Maybe they all show. Need an Alan because they all need
some, We all need an Alan.
We all need some tension in our lives.
We all need like a fun person in our life. I mean, when Alan is just watering the plants, he has his headphones on and he just looks like he's so much fun watering the plants.
Yeah.
Let's map out the crushes. So
This is the origami.
This is the origami. So Gensei was interested in Ryota because he thought Ryota liked him, but he's realizing that Ryota does not like him.
Mm-hmm.
Ryota, we thought, liked Gensei, but then he flipped on us and told us he liked Shun. But now, because Shun and Dai are seemingly close, Ryota feels like he lost that battle. He likes Kazuto. Taehyun. He casually mentions
He said he's interested in Usak.
Yeah.
Which I find also kind of an odd pairing.
And literally no one cares.
Oh.
Usak is interested in Kazuto. Alan likes Kazuto. Kazuto likes...
We don't know.
?
We don't know. Yeah, I think it's a tie between Alan and Usak. Poor Ryota, though, when he confessed to Kazuto, Kazuto was like... Thank you for telling me. That must have been very hard. My heart really has a soft spot for Ryota
He's just looking for love, clearly.
He really is.
Yeah.
Do we do a marry, fuck, kill?
Of course we do it. Marry. Who would you marry?
Maybe Kazuto.
Is that who I said last week? Because he's the stable one?
Yeah, I think so. I might even marry Taehyun.
Just he also you gotta seems keep your quite, Korean
yes,
lifted
I gotta
up.
Save my Korean boy. He also seems just mature,
yes,
and stable,
yes, forward thinking. Wants to challenge the government.
Right.
We like this activist. I think I want to fuck Kazuto right now. The way he was driving that coffee truck.
Stop.
I mean, I love a guy who can drive like with confidence. And just the way he drives was very sexy to me.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Rewatch how he just kind of handles that wheel, right. You know?
I think Alan.
Oh.
He likes big butts.
I think I would marry Alan. He's such a positive.
He's so
person.
Fun. I know. That would be good energy to be around.
And he likes, he's good at solving problems.
Yes.
You got a chicken budget issue? Guys on it.
Let's sell a latte.
Thinking outside the box.
Mm-hmm.
Kill.
Poof. I think Gensei is an easy answer. But then also I have a soft spot for Gensei because he was telling his story about his dad and that was heartbreaking. And I think, these boys probably also carry a lot with them emotionally. But I would have to kill him off because he's done nothing for us.
I'm going to kill Ryota.
I think it's a tie between the two.
Ryota needs to get his shit together.
Shun also.
But Shun I can't quite kill just because, my God, what a sad life.
He came in a basket. Yeah.
He came in a basket. Okay, that was episodes 3 and 4 of The Boyfriend. There's just a lot happening. We've got a lot of crushing, a lot of confessions, and a lot of flip-flopping.
I don't blame them.
Yeah. Agreed.
But, they're supposed to be there for a month.
Mm-hmm. How much time do we think
has passed? I feel like it's been 2 days or, it doesn't seem like a lot. But it must have been a lot because there are a lot of scenes where Kazuto is not there.
Yeah.
Genze and Taehyun are not there. So it must be several days are passing before they're going on these dates. You notice how Shun and Dai are just always there. They're not working.
And also not making that much money on the truck either.
Yeah. There were some scenes I was frustrated by their inaction. Whereas Alan, again, he's going out. He's like, hey, come and get some coffee.
I'm going to take a photo for you guys. Yeah. Okay, loving the boyfriend. Hope you guys are loving it with us.
And if you're listening to this and you've gotten this far, please subscribe, give us a 5-star rating, and
you can comment on our Spotify now and ask us questions. It turned on this feature. Yeah.
Okay.
So it's new.
Yeah. Ask us questions. Please subscribe. It really would do so much for us and allow us to continue what we're doing. So yeah, help us out.
We appreciate you guys. Until next week, be well. We'll talk to you then.
Bye.